Welcome back to Unreasonable. We're here at the Summit for Religious Freedom in Washington, D.C., hosted by Americans United. And right now, we're sitting in the Lutheran Church of the Reformation right across from the Capitol building with Congressman Jared Huffman. Congressman Huffman was first elected in November of 2012 and currently serves on the Natural Resources Committee and the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. He chairs the Natural Resources Subcommittee on Water, Oceans, and Wildlife. Recognizing his environmental leadership, Speaker Nancy Pelosi appointed Congressman Huffman to serve on the Select Committee on Climate Change in February of 2019. Only the second member in contemporary records to describe his ethical system as not being God-based, Huffman identifies openly as a humanist. He is one of the founders of the Congressional Freethought Caucus. Congressman Huffman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be with you.
I would love to lead by reiterating a question you were just asked in the forum before the Americans United crowd, which is to clarify a little bit about your personal belief system, and then if you could add maybe a little bit about the importance of clarifying to folks and destigmatizing the label of secularism or humanism.
Yeah. We could spend the whole show on just that, but sure, I'm happy to do that. I grew up in a branch of the Mormon Church. That's the Reorganized Latter-day Saints. They've changed their name since I was a member. They're now called Community of Christ. So for a number of years, they've been kind of more progressive than the Mormons, which is a low bar. But that was the church I grew up in, and I was pretty active. I was a member of the priesthood up until the time I left the church. So about 20 or 21, things stopped adding up for me. And then I spent a few decades as a closeted atheist humanist. I came to embrace the humanist label because I think it's a little more complete than the atheist label. Nothing wrong with atheism. And the stigma is a real thing that needs to be debunked, in my view. But humanism, I think, is a more affirmative expression of moral values and principles. And for a long time, I didn't know much about it. I just read Kurt Vonnegut books and loved Kurt Vonnegut. And he was a humanist, and he talked about it in terms that really resonated with me. So I was always kind of thinking maybe I'm a humanist. And years later, I finally figured out that I really am. And once I got to Congress, as I explained just now in the group conversation, I found myself surrounded by so much religious encroachment into our public policy and public institutions that I felt like I needed to come out to sort of defy conventional political wisdom and publicly identify as who I am. So that's how I got here. And the stigma continues to be a thing. I feel it. You know, I'm not the most sympathetic messenger. I'm a straight white male. You know, here I am, a creature of privilege in many ways, by many definitions.
Some of us are doing the best we can to improve the our record.
and I'm at peace with my fading patriarchy, believe me. But this is one space where I feel it.
Yeah,
I do. I think we are all just subjected to so many indignities and presumptions and impositions because of the Christian privilege and the stigma that continues to apply to non-believers.
Well, I'm delighted to hear you speak of humanism as a more comprehensive description of what you believe, while also acknowledging atheism, which I think is still kind of the dirty word. So it means a lot to me to hear that. Actually, when I was, I'm married to a devout Christian, and when we were first together, I used it the other way around. I was afraid I'd lose her if I used the A word. So I was a humanist to her. And your perspective now, of course, I identify as a humanist as well. It gives me a new perspective on the comprehensiveness of that word. I did want to ask you about your experience in the Latter-day Saints Church. Mm-hmm. Was it perhaps, and this is coming from somewhat of a place of ignorance about the faith itself, the intensity or cognitive dissonance of the theology itself that drove you away from the practice?
Actually, no. I came to appreciate the cognitive dissonance later, once I was sort of out. It was really the big pillars of faith, you know, the notion of an intercessory God, an afterlife, all of these big picture things just stopped working for me. I had some events in my life that I lost my father in a way that really kind of stunned me because I naively believed that my faith and my God would not allow a rotten thing like that to happen. So it just started me thinking. Plus, I was getting a liberal education at UC Santa Barbara and reading all kinds of interesting things. It all just, you know, crumbled at that point. And so once you make that break with the big tickets, the big articles of faith, you can look back at some of the doctrine and theology. And yeah, you really appreciate the cognitive dissonance of the Book of Mormon and things like that.
Yeah. One last thing, and then I'm going to stop hogging the mic. I got involved in activism as a kid because I was committed to defending the environment. So I'm thrilled that this was your foray into this work. And once again, it's like they were stealing my questions here. Someone from the AU crowd asked you about the intersection of environmentalism and faith and the fight for church-state separation, rather. Can you re-articulate the answer that you provided to the AU crowd? I think it'd be valuable for our listeners to hear.
Yeah, if you think our public policy and institutions should be driven by facts, reason, and science, as I do, you got to be an environmentalist. You really have to care. You have to acknowledge the climate crisis, and you need to understand we're running out of time to do something about it. You know, there's another way in which this faith and environmentalism intersection works for me. If you believe that this planet and this one go around at life is all we've got, as I do, and I still think that's pretty great, you really, I think, should feel a great urgency to not screw it up. And I think that can be incredibly inspiring. And it's counterintuitive for people of faith. They think that you're morally adrift and that, you know, to them, those of them that care about the environment, and I do work with some who do, they see it as God's creation and they have their own sort of framework for their work. But you can come at it from the atheist humanist perspective and get to the same place and maybe even more passionately.
It's beautiful to hear you describe it that way, because that's how I feel that we have so little time on Earth. Another perspective, those who are not willing to be stewards of the environment are probably viewing this as a holding pattern before infinite salvation somewhere better.
Right.
So what's the use?
True. No, I have Republican colleagues who just think that the backstop of God, you know, will kick in and protect his creation.
We're fine, whatever we do.
Yeah. Right. It's a free pass.
I actually wanted to thank you for your work on PFAS and plastic reduction. That is near and dear to my heart. I live in an area where I have well water, and it's very harmful if those things are in the environment. So
thank you for that.
And the other side, what I've been seeing lately in a few states is this nonsense on chemtrail reduction. And it just, on the science denier end, it was just like wonk. But,
and that's a cross-cutting conspiracy theory,
yes,
you know. It takes you so far to the right that you circumnavigate to the left.
Right. Yeah. It's this weird phenomenon.
I call that the horseshoe effect.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, but I wanted to actually talk to you about financing and a few things with, well, I have so many questions, but let me narrow it down first to the best practices for individuals to report church tax exemptions.
Yeah.
You spoke about the Johnson Amendment a little bit, and I'm hoping you could kind of wax on that for me.
Okay. So, yeah, thank you, first of all, because I listened to your pod. You guys are always tying things back to political action and winning elections and why that matters in people's lives. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
This one is tricky because, in theory, we ought to be calling out all of these Christian nationalist pastors that stand at the podium and just flout the Johnson Amendment and church-state separation. And, you know, Jack Hibbs, one of the worst of the hate
preachers.
We
wanted to talk to you about that situation.
Literally mocks it to the point of standing at his podium, endorsing a Republican candidate for Senate, and then saying, oops, Johnson Amendment requires me to not do this from the podium and from the pulpit. And so he steps 3 feet to the side and says the same thing. I mean, this is flaunting the law. And, you know, I think they feel emboldened to do this because of the Supreme Court, which, you know, you put the Johnson Amendment before this Supreme Court, I'm not sure I like our chances.
No.
So what about the IRS? I know that in 2020, 40 members of Congress had asked the IRS to look at the Family Research Council.
Yeah.
Has anything come from that?
My colleagues and I have followed up on that with multiple letters to the IRS. It's a joke that the Family Research Council is now considered a church, which basically means all of their dark money gets even darker, and there is far less transparency and accountability for them to do their politics while having all of these protections against disclosure and any kind of accountability. So we have not heard back from the IRS. And, you know, I think this is something where they have just been very effective. What they did to Lois Lerner what they did to the IRS, going after them and sidelining them essentially in this entire space has really worked to their advantage, to the point now where the IRS is rubber stamping church status for Tony Perkins and his completely partisan political operation that now gets to call itself a church. It's really shameful. I think we're going to probably need to legislate something on this when the stars align and we get the right people in office. And we're going to need a new Supreme Court, maybe a combination of the two to finally turn the tide on it.
So in the meantime, should we all form churches?
You beat me to it, Christina. The Church of Unreasonable, maybe?
I think you
hold up the mirror.
You are every bit a church as much as the Family Research Council. So
love
go
it.
For it.
Not to depart from levity back to the mires of the worst Christian nationalists, but Mike Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Jack Hibbs briefly. This is a bit of a softball question, but I want to hear it from you. Why do you suspect that he invited this guy, a known, hateful, zealous white Christian nationalist? Yeah.
Well, look, there's nothing innocent or naive about what Mike Johnson does with his Christian nationalist allies. He is in the thick of it. He is connected at the highest levels, has been for many, many years.
Peel to heaven.
Yeah. So as I told the group a few minutes ago, you know, Mike Johnson may come across as this sort of Mr. Rogers character. He's mild-mannered, soft-spoken. He presents as a nice guy. But his politics and his ideology is extreme. That's why the Freethought Caucus did a 14-page white paper, really taking a deep dive into all of the things that he has said and done as a lawyer, as a state legislator, and as a member of Congress. He hasn't been in Congress for very long, but wow, has he done some extreme things during his short tenure.
I actually wanted to talk about the work that the Congressional Freethought Caucus did mm-hmm. with that white paper. That was, I think, back in January. You had Matt Taylor and others talk to the congressional body about the rise and the risk of extremism and Christian nationalism.
Yeah.
Did anything come from that? I'd like to know who attended. I was hopeful that some members across the aisle actually attended that. I'm hoping you can tell me. And I'm wondering if you plan on having additional, like learning, mm-hmm. like educational series for congressional critters.
Yeah. Well, we do that. And that's what that briefing was in January, where we rolled out this white paper and we had Matthew Taylor and Americans United, Rachel, and others there to kind of explain it. And it was mostly congressional staff, but I did have a few of my colleagues from Congress there. I hate to dash your hopes, but there were no Republicans.
We're so surprised to hear this.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a time when you probably could have found some Republicans who cared about church-state separation, maybe even some closeted atheist Republicans. I mean, come on.
Because they have to. I mean, Donald Trump surely an atheist, like, among so many others.
So, I don't know, is narcissism a religion?
Well, yeah, that's true. I guess you're not an atheist if you believe yourself to be God.
So. Yeah. But no, we're still looking for that Republican who will join us in the Freethought Caucus. They should. If you look at what we do and what we stand for, you know, it's not a partisan thing. It's an American thing. It's a constitutional thing. But so far, no luck.
That is very disappointing.
We are going to do more, though.
That's wonderful.
Asked about that. And so, you know, we do these kind of teach-in roundtables. We bring in people like Andrew Seidel and others who you've had on your show to constantly try to raise awareness. And we also pick some specific issues. So this Do No Harm Act is one of our priorities in this Congress. This is addressing some ways in which a nominally pro-religious freedom act law has been turned on its head and used basically to weaponize hate and bigotry and discrimination and lawlessness in the name of religion. So we've got to fix that. And you can bet that Republicans are going to, you know, cry foul and paint themselves as persecuted and all the usual things. But it's just not okay in a secular republic to have religion wielded basically as a hall pass to break the law and do all of these terrible things.
It's a great bill. Is there bipartisan support for Do No Harm?
We'll need to verify this, but I would bet you a quarter that there is no Republican yet co-sponsoring it, which is just where we are these days.
This is a question we actually ask everybody. It's if you believe, perhaps, that Mike Johnson, not unlike Donald Trump, was sort of a conduit for increased awareness, activism, once he was elected in 2016. Every time he appointed some crazy person to run or destroy, to gut a position on his cabinet, the American people became better apprised of how our government works and aware of these positions. And
you're talking about Trump's cabinet?
Yes. And, yeah. And I feel like Mike Johnson has been that now for religious nationalism. You know, we now, for the first time, maybe ever, certainly to this extent, I feel like I am hearing mainstream media outlets referencing Christian nationalism. Mm-hmm. Maybe where before they'd have been afraid to address it because they might offend Christians. Do you
agree know what I
that
think
we're
really,
sort of in a moment?
I sort of tentatively agree with you, but I think a big part of that is the Alabama IVF decision.
Yes. Hmm. Yep.
I think it was so egregious. And this Alabama Supreme Court justice and the interview he gave that was just steeped in the worst Christian nationalism. And of course, he's a Dominionist and he was talking about seven mountains and all of these things. So the media had no choice. They had to report on this crazy thing that was happening. And so that was great. Yeah, for the first time, everybody in mainstream media is talking about crazy Dominionist Christian nationalism. But it was sort of portrayed as this one-off. This is just this crazy, obscure extremism that will surely be corrected by the Alabama legislature, by someone else. And I think they missed the true breadth and seriousness of this movement. I do. I don't think we are yet talking about it for what it really is.
Sure.
I have dozens of colleagues in Congress that believe exactly what that Alabama Supreme Court justice said in his interview. Dozens. And they're acting on it every single day.
Well, you just stated to the AU crowd that you were the first to address or connect, rather, the influence of white Christian nationalism to the J6 insurrection on the congressional floor. And I'm wondering if, even for you, was this a wake-up call? I mean, obviously, you were aware of the problem, but was it more of a wake-up call or just an opportunity that needed to be seized because now they had showed their hand?
Yeah. I think I already kind of saw what they were all about. I mean, if you were paying attention to the Jericho marches and other things leading up to the election, and even in that weird period between the election and January 6th, when they were running around the country in state capitals and other places doing these Jericho marches, you know, there was no ambiguity. You saw exactly what they were up to.
Yeah.
So the country, I think, saw it a little more clearly on January 6th. But even then, the media did not talk about what was obviously happening. I mean, they were beating cops over the head with appeal to heaven flags and crashing through the Capitol doors and windows with their Christian nationalist flags and holding their Bibles. The media did not talk about that. And, you know, disappointingly, as awesome as the January 6th Select Committee was and the report that they did, as great as it was, and Liz Cheney and others, they didn't talk about this either.
Yeah.
Yeah. It failed on the Christian nationalist front or the Dominionist front. It was like they kind of skirted around it.
Yeah.
They didn't want to touch it.
So we're still not there, in my opinion, even after Alabama IVF, even after Mike Johnson, we're still not talking candidly.
Is it helping us win elections?
Is it helping us win elections? Well, certainly the reproductive choice side of it is hopefully helping us win elections.
What do you think about the upcoming transition of power and how Mike Johnson will engage in that.
Mike Johnson will continue to be the speaker for the rest of this Congress, mainly because he is a useful idiot.
Ah, okay.
But you mean the transfer of
I'm talking about the transfer of presidential power.
Oh, okay.
When we get to January.
When Joe Biden wins.
Yeah.
And
we should worry.
Yeah,
we should worry.
So I'd like to know what your thoughts are on a plan A, plan B, and plan C so that we don't have complete chaos. And I know that whatever you tell us, we'll have to work on, but that's,
well,
that's what
look,
we do.
Plan A is win the election and win it big, mm-hmm. win it at every level.
It's
win
your
it,
mantra.
High turnouts, wide margins.
Yep. So win it so that they won't even try the same drill again from 2021. Plan B, you don't like to think about. You know, if somehow the Republicans hold the majority of the House, they're going to be presiding, or the Senate, you know, one House or the other, will have some say over the certification of the Electoral College, and that takes you into some scary territory. So we have passed a sort of modest reform of the Electoral Count Act. Hopefully that will provide some protection. But there's reason to be very, very vigilant about this, and don't assume it can't happen here, because January 6th should have made it clear to all of us it can happen here. If we let it, it will happen here.
Yeah. So we have just a couple minutes. I want to talk about bravery, because it takes a lot of guts to do what you're doing, to speak as you speak. These folks believe that they are engaging in spiritual warfare. This transcends life or death for them. Where do you find the courage to speak in the face of very real danger?
I have it a lot better than many of my colleagues. And frankly, some of you in the secular community that confront these folks at school boards and at community meetings and other places where it is rough. It's getting pretty nasty out there. But, you know, as the old saying goes, tyranny fills the void when good people don't speak up and do things. So I think all of us, you know, me from my platform in Congress, you on your podcast and in your activism, and all of your listeners in their communities and in whatever respective roles they have to start calling this out. If they normalize this, and if we are all sort of forced to just go along with this Christian nationalist agenda, I don't know that we can pull back from that, because it is, as you all know, a dismantling of democracy. That's the idea here. That's what's really at stake. They understand that their positions are not popular. They are extreme. And that's why democracy doesn't really work for them. So if they can achieve their power objective, they will dismantle democracy. And we will no longer have the ability to push back and protect our freedom. So
you just gave us our call to action. Yeah. So, Congressman Huffman, thank you so much for your time. It's been a joy to speak with you. Thanks for all the work that you're doing to save our country.
You too.